Today's show is sponsored by Ritual. Ritual created a smarter vitamin with the 9 essential ingredients women lack most. Choose clean ingredients that are backed by science and sign up now at ritual.com/less. All right, guys, this is part 2 of my conversation with Robin Jones Gunn. We loved it so much for part 1. We didn't even get to half of what we wanted to talk about. So we are going to do a part 2. And today I really want to hit on how Robin does her creative process, how she started to get into writing, how she did work plus ministry and motherhood. And then I really want to dive in to motherhood and just a lot of wisdom from her of how to be a mom and what she would tell herself as if she could tell her, go back and tell herself things as a young mom. So Robin, can you just tell us about how, for those that don't know, how you even got started with writing and what that looks like?
I never thought I was going to be a writer, although my kindergarten teacher wrote on my report card, Robin has not yet grasped her basic math skills. So I was terrible at math. But she wrote, however, she keeps the entire class entertained at ragtime with her stories. So that was kindergarten. So apparently I was already a storyteller then. But there was nothing that really was developed during high school or college or anything in me that thought that I'd make a career of writing. When I was married for 2 or 3 years, my husband was a youth pastor, and I was always telling stories to the girls in the youth group. I taught a Sunday school class, and I loved to tell them about women in the Bible. And my husband thought that I should write a book, and I was terrified. I didn't know how to write a book. And he sent me to a writer's conference. He signed me up. I was so mad at him.
You were.
I was so mad.
Were you a mom yet? Did you have
we didn't have kids yet. I had a full-time job. I worked at a bank, which is a really bad thing when you don't like numbers and you like words. But it was, you know, it was a job. And I went to this writer's conference and met other writers and editors and publishers, and I got so excited. I came home and wrote a devotion and sent it off, and it was published in the Upper Room magazine, and they paid me $10. And I was a published author.
That's
it was
amazing.
I know. And then I had a chance to write some more articles, and some were published and some weren't. And our first child was born, our son. And then our daughter was born 4 years after that. But when our son was little, I wrote some books for him just for fun. Mm-hmm. And a friend encouraged me to send them to a publisher, and I did. And they were published. So I had these children's books published.
Which ones were they?
They're out of print. It's called Billy and Bear.
Aww.
And there were 6 little books, and it came with a little stuffed bear. And you know what's amazing is that my daughter saved a set. And her little boy is now 3 years old. And when I was last visiting them, all he wanted me to do was read Billy and Bear books to him.
Oh, my goodness.
And she had saved it with the little stuffed bear. So he'd hold the little bear, and I'd read Billy and Bear books to him.
That is so sweet.
I know. It's incredible. But so I kept writing children's books, and I had written maybe 14 children's books, kind of like a hobby. But the turning point was on a camping trip with a bunch of kids from our youth group, and we were at San Clemente State Beach in California. Summer fallout, and these girls, 13-year-old girls, were in the tent reading books. And I went in the tent, why aren't you out at the beach? And they would rather be in the tent reading about the beach and the sun and the surf and the sand and the boys. And they had brought with them 30 books that they just checked out from the library and wanted to spend their week reading. And I read 3 of their books, and they were really evocative romance novels. And I said, does your mother know this is what you're reading? And they said, well, if you don't want us reading these books, give us something else. And that was 30 years ago. 30 years ago this month was when the first Christy Miller book was published.
Oh my goodness.
And that came about as a result of those girls saying, why don't you write a book for us? We'll tell you what to write. How hard could it be? And it was really hard, but I'd read to them every week when I was teaching Sunday school class. After I taught the lesson, then I'd read what I'd written that week, and they would tell me everything I did wrong and everything I had to change. And then I would go back to work, and it took 2 years, and I had 10 rejections from different publishers before the first Christy Miller book, Summer Promise, was published 30 years ago. And then that led to the next book and the next and the next. And I've written about...
So when you signed the contract, was it just the one book?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The first contract was for one book, and then it was, well, that had a good response. Let's do another one, okay, and we'll now sign for 3 books. And it mm-hmm. just kept going. So I've written over 40 books about these characters over the years. And Christy Miller started with, she was 14 in Summer Promise. And in the last book I wrote about her, which is called Sunset Lullabies, she just had her 30th birthday. So she grew up with you, Alyssa.
I know.
You grew up with her.
No, okay. When you had told me one time when I was younger, a lot younger, there was a verse that you had picked out, because usually you pick out a verse before you write a book, and it was Psalm...
Yeah, Psalm 102... And I don't remember. This is terrible. Numbers. They don't stick with me again. But I know the verse. It says, let this be written for a future generation, that a people not yet created may praise the Lord. And that's happened. I prayed that verse as I was writing. And now there are moms that are telling me that their daughters are reading mm-hmm. the books. Mm-hmm. And it's this future generation. And what's crazy to me, I just had a text from a friend who has her granddaughter visiting, and she had put the Christy Miller books out, and the granddaughter picked up the first one and read just the first chapter and looked at her and said, Grandma, I love this book. And so, you know, her grandma texted me, because we've been friends for 25 years, and she said, how is it possible that she can still relate to it now as a 11, 12-year-old? That just has to be God.
Right.
There, mm-hmm. It spans the generations. Just the favor of the Lord has been on the Christy Miller's whole collection over all these years.
Well, and I can't tell you how many DMs and emails and people that tell me that they've come to know the Lord through the Christy Miller series. That's incredible.
I still, every week, every month, hear from young women that mm-hmm. have understood. They read the story. I mean, Jesus taught parables, right? And then mm-hmm. people go, oh, I see what the kingdom of heaven is like. And that's the power of fiction. And to write that story and put a role model in there and let Christy struggle and mm-hmm. let her figure things out and have that... Christy being this character for whom our relationship with Christ becomes real, and the reader says, I want that. I get that. Mm-hmm. I never understood it this way before. I can't explain it. It's a God thing.
So cool. Okay, so then, okay, tell us a little bit about how you wrote then as you had little kids, because this came out when Rachel was born?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, right. The first Christy Miller book came out when, well, Rachel was 2 years old when, and our son would be six then.
Okay.
So he was, and we were homeschooling and
ministry.
Youth pastor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we moved during that time. But I knew that if I was going to have this time to write, that it had to be a sacrifice for me. My family shouldn't have to sacrifice for something that I knew I was called to do, and later really came to understand I'm gifted to do this. We have a great word in Hawaii, that kuleana. Your kuleana is your responsibility, because you've been gifted with something, and so your kuleana is your responsibility to use that gift. And so that understanding was, how can I do this? Well, I've always been able to get up early. It doesn't, I just pop up early bird.
Like we're talking like 3, 4 a.m.
And so that's what I did. Actually, I read a book by C.S. Lewis about, it was just a little book, and it's called Letters to an American Lady. And there was something where she asked in a letter, how do you manage to keep up with all your handwritten correspondence? And he said something like, I am a, you know, early riser, and I rise before it's dawn, make a proper pot of tea, and answer all my correspondence before breakfast. And I read that and thought, well, I'm a notoriously early. Yeah. I think he said something like, I love the still, dewy, cobwebbed hours of the morning. It's like, I do too. So I seriously went and bought a teapot and set the alarm. And I started getting up at 3 a.m. 3 days a week, make a pot of tea. And the phone never rang. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever wanted anything. By about 7:30, the household, everyone would start to wake up and we'd have a normal day. And then I'd get back in the rhythm of, I mean, it still is my rhythm. I still get up early in the morning, and I was up at 4 o'clock this morning writing. It's just the most creative time for me.
Mm-hmm.
By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm worthless.
Yeah. I feel like after lunch, I'm like, oh, I don't think I can form two words
where
together,
am I?
Right?
Yeah. But that's where I think for a lot of young moms, and I was working part-time at the time too. It was just the only way to carve out that time. And I had a lot of friends that were talking about different TV series or things that they were doing in their spare time. And I never knew what they were talking about because I just kind of compacted all my spare time to write, and instead of staying up at night watching TV, I'd go to bed. So I didn't know what was happening on the latest series. But that's how the work got done. And I think that anyone who wants to write a book, and there are many, many people who should write a book, but it's that discipline of finding a way to carve out that time, make a space, set a time, set a deadline. You have to be your own boss. If you had a job, you wouldn't go, oh, I can't leave till I put those dishes in the dishwasher, or oh well, I'll be 15 minutes late to work, but I better put another load of clothes in. And yet if you work at home, or if you're writing, or you're developing a home business, that's a big danger of always, there's always something that could be done,
right?
But you have to just say, this is what I need to do, and this is where I need to go and sit and focus to get it done.
And I think giving yourself the permission that, I don't know if this is necessarily what you said, but like, this is my job, or this is my goal. Because I think a lot of times when we work from home or do something creative that isn't necessarily, that's more self-employed, it's really easy to make excuses, or if someone asks if you can hang out at a certain time, or if you can go do something, you're like, oh yeah, like I don't really have anything I need to do. Instead of being like, no, I can't. Like, this is,
you have to believe it.
Time.
You have to believe it. You have to say, no, I have an appointment, and the appointment is, or work, or however you want to phrase it. But you have to believe that it's up to you to make it protected, because nobody else is going to protect it.
No.
No one understands. Mm-mm. I was at the post office today, and I was mailing a bunch of books. And she said, oh, did you write a book? And I said, yeah, I've actually been writing for a couple decades. And she goes, I always wanted to write a book. And maybe someday I'll just sit down and do it. And, you know, you can't at the post office say, well, you have to set a time. Right. But how many times have you heard that?
So
how many,
many
times have I heard that? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen just automatically.
Hey guys, I'm really excited to tell you about this new company I found called Ritual, and they are all about supplying you with vitamins and all the things that we lack in our body that we need, and they are the best company for it. And I think I love them so much because I really want to take vitamins. I know that I lack things in my diet, and I really value vitamins, but sometimes it's hard to know which company is best or which ones are the best to take. And Ritual, I feel like, is the trustworthy company that I can go to, and I know that I'm getting everything I need, and their vitamins are legit. They just help me to make healthy choices. They fill in the gaps of my diet, and it helps me to remember it every day. I love them so much. They sent it to us in the mail, and it's been super easy. They're vegan, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free, made in the USA without synthetic fillers or colorants. And the best part, I feel like, is they actually taste good. They're mint scented with an enriched tab with pure peppermint oil. So that's delicious. You can visit their website to learn more and why every ingredient is beneficial to where it's sourced. This is what you need to know. They're subscription-based, no gap in nutrient levels. It's $30 a month and delivered right to your door. So how easy is that? You don't miss a day because it's just on a subscription. And if you forget a few days, you can snooze your order until you catch up. So the best part is we have a really easy way for you guys to order it. All you have to do is go to ritual.com/last, L-A-S-T-S. And it's so great because 95% of women don't get the vitamins and minerals we need on a daily basis. And so Ritual created a smarter vitamin with the 9 essential ingredients women lack most. So yes, I need this. And the fact that it's catered to women is so awesome. So choose clean ingredients. It's backed by science. Sign up now at ritual.com/last, L-A-S-T-S. But I also love how you said, and I know it's different for different families, but I love how you said that I'm going to sacrifice. And I'm not going to take time away from my family to do this. And I think sometimes we do, and that's okay. And yeah, it looks different for different families. But I love that, I don't know, that your kids came first. And you know, that you poured into them. They were your top priority. And you still pursued your dreams and worked hard. But you learned to balance it in a, I don't know, I feel like in a really healthy way.
Yeah, because Ross and I really decided early on, we never wanted to say to our children, go away, mommy's serving Jesus and can't pay attention to you, or or don't need daddy right now, he needs to go serve the Lord or something. Like we needed our children to always know that this was our ministry at our home and that our children were priority. But then to train them in the way they should go, like to teach them that there were times when they, as part of the family, we all give and take. And so one thing that helped me a lot was having, this is so simple, Alyssa, but it worked. I had a candle, a little votive candle that on the coffee table. Yeah. And so, well, you know this story, because I think every woman should have her space, whether it's, I have a snuggle chair.
And it really is so snuggly.
It is. And I've had it for so long, I've had it reupholstered because it was just falling apart. But our children knew that that chair in the corner, I had a basket there with my Bible and my notebook, and if I was having quiet time, I'd light the candle in the morning, and if they'd come in and they'd see that the candle was lit, they'd know that mommy had a very important appointment. I was talking to Jesus about them. they better not interrupt that. And then when I blew out the candle, then they could come running in. Can we have more cereal or what, you know, that they just knew that that time was protected. And that worked well too with when I would be writing sometimes, if they'd, I just would need to get one more chapter, you know, something finished. So I can take a half an hour and I can just tell them I'll be there in half an hour and they'd know.
Yeah.
But.
And I'm sure it morphed too as they got older.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember Rachel saying there'd be times, probably more when she was a teenager, where she would be in the kitchen and you would walk out of your office having a full on conversation and she would like start to talk to you thinking that you were talking to her, and then you wouldn't even know that she was there, and you would look in the fridge and keep having this conversation, and then finally she would realize, oh, these are the characters in her book that she's having this conversation with. And so I'm sure it morphed too.
Yes.
As they got older. And
because as we've said before, it's messy. I'm not saying it was perfect. I'm saying if they were here in the interview, they could tell you a lot of things that could have been done differently. But to be intentional from the start really helps, so that you know I've carved out time and I have some pieces in place and I can have a career at home. I can do this. I can be taking the joy in this kuleana that God's, take the responsibility for this gift he's given me.
So how did you always feel the creative juices flowing, or sometimes was it like, I just have to produce this?
Many times it's just show up to work. Mm-hmm. And I always feel like I present myself. It's just like that surrender that we've talked about before, just like surrendering mm-hmm. to the Lord each new day. His mercies are new every morning. Okay, I'll take some of those. I'm ready to start fresh. Whatever yesterday was about, forget it, start fresh. And so that when I go back to a project that I was writing and look at it, that it, even if it was the first part of that writing day was just thinking or typing and erasing, or a lot of times I have to get a notebook and just write things by hand, kind of mm-hmm. connects your brain differently. Mm-hmm. And I can write and write and write and then go, oh, okay, now I know. And then I can go back to typing. So whatever the devices are that help yeah. to get the creative juices flowing. Mm-hmm. But no, it's not. It's hard work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Telling stories is hard work. And it's crazy because it's art. So then it's up for criticism. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I just poured my heart out on paper and now you're evaluating right.
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how, oh man, I'm losing it. I had a really good question. did you ever feel like as a young mom, or maybe older mom too, as you were writing and homeschooling and being a mom, even if you take the homeschooling part out, did you ever feel like, wow, like I'm just pouring so much out. I have nothing left to give. I want to give up on this. I can't believe they expect this of me. Like more with the writing, not your children.
But like, yeah.
Or I wish I didn't have to do this to like earn a living because this is a lot. The Lord's asking a lot of me right now. Did you ever feel like that? And then how did you work through it?
Well, I can honestly say that, yes, I did think that many, many times. And I looked back and I don't know that the Lord was asking a lot of me. I think I put a lot of pressure on myself in different seasons because I somehow thought I could do everything mm-hmm. or that I really wanted to do something. So I'd take on another this or that. And there was a season where we lived in Reno, Nevada, and we were doing college ministry. It was really a difficult 3 years there for me. And I had taken on a radio job, and I would drive about an hour away and do the recording for this kid's program one day a week. And I'd come home and I'm writing books and I'm speaking at women's events and things. And I had a neighbor who called me one night. It was snowing and she said, can you come down to my house? And I just thought, it's 10 o'clock at night. Come on. I just got back from doing my Christian radio program. I'm writing my Christian books and I'm working at this church alongside my husband.
I'm raising godly children.
I know. And so what does this neighbor want? I walked down there in the snow and she opens the door and she had had hip surgery, and her children were gone with their dad that night, and she was home alone. Her mom had left, and she said, I didn't know who else to call, but I wondered if you could help me take off my shoes so I can go to bed. And I just thought, I am not worthy to untie the laces on her shoes. Mm-hmm. And I tucked her into bed and got her a glass of water. And when I went in the kitchen to get the water, I noticed like I'd purchased these Christian books for her on how to save your marriage when she was going through all the rough stuff. And, you know, and I had a little card for when she could listen to my nice Christian radio station, you know, when the program was on the air. But those things were sitting there untouched. But it was that cup of cold water in mm-hmm. Jesus' name. And I sat next to her and I said, Janice, can I pray for you? And she said, oh, yes, would you? And I just placed my hand on her forehead and I prayed for her, and then I leaned over and I kissed her on the cheek, and I didn't expect to, but I said, "I love you." And she said, "I know you do. That's why I called you." Mm-hmm. And when I left her house, I thought, that's all Jesus asked me to do, was to love him and love my neighbor. And I'm off speaking at retreats and writing all these mm-hmm. articles and like talking about what it means to follow Christ. But the Lord just brought me to this level place of, here's your neighbor, go love her. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm asking you to do. And within 2 or 3 days, I called the radio station and said, I need to resign. And there was somebody else that they could fill the spot with very quickly. Mm-hmm. I was not indispensable. And I'm sure, I don't remember exactly, I'm sure I got an extension on a deadline of writing project or something, so I could be more present with my mm-hmm. family. And those leveling times are so helpful when you do work at home or in any kind of a ministry, or you're developing your speaking or your writing or something, because if it's not at that very fundamental, this is all God is asking me to do, if you don't start there, then it gets hollow and hollow, and it's just repeating. It's not mm-hmm. real. So yeah, just He's so gracious to level us.
And I feel like when we are leveled, then that's when I think we can pour out more. Because mm-hmm. it's like we're not just pouring out to produce something, or because we have to be filled up to pour out. And so
yeah.
I think when he breaks it down for us and we're doing real life and just simple things that he asks us to do, then I feel like we get our tank filled and we're like, oh, now I have something that is genuine to pour out.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like, whatever your craft is or your creativity or your calling or your job.
You know, I just read this morning, and I don't have it in front of me. It was Romans 9, and it was that the phrase was, that we are his vessels of mercy. And I just, I circled that because it was like, we're just a vessel. We're just these empty containers. And he fills us with mercy. And then that's what we pour out. That's what we get to do, is just be the carrier of that mercy to our children, to our neighbors, to our families. So yeah, there's time to do anything and everything that God's called you to do, but it's this crazy, messy balance where you are surrendered and available, and when God levels you, you just pay attention and start in on whatever is next.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And there's different seasons, and
absolutely.
Yeah.